Good morning, and welcome to Claude Daily. I'm Alex. It is Monday, May 18th, 2026, and we have got a packed show for you today.
Genuinely packed. Like, I stayed up too late reading the briefings last night, and I still feel like we're going to run out of time.
We might. So, let's just get into it. I want to tease the headline right at the top because it's one of those things that, if you'd told me 2 years ago this was going to happen, I'd have said you were being optimistic.
Yeah, go ahead, say it out loud.
Anthropic has surpassed OpenAI in enterprise AI adoption. That's the story. That is the story of this moment in the industry, and everything else we're covering today sort of orbits around it.
It really does. And look, we've been watching the trajectory for a while now, but there's something about seeing it actually cross that threshold that still feels, I don't know, significant. Like, actually significant.
Right. So we're going to dig into what's driving that, what it means for the broader competitive landscape, some really specific and fascinating individual stories about how Claude is being used. And then, and this is important, we also need to talk about some serious security concerns that have emerged, because it's not all champagne and confetti.
No, definitely not. The G20 angle is genuinely alarming, and we should not gloss over it.
We won't. But first, the big picture. Let's get into this. So the framing here is that Anthropic has achieved what analysts are now calling a significant competitive milestone. Enterprise AI adoption, meaning large organizations, corporations, institutions actually deploying and paying for AI at scale, Anthropic is now ahead of OpenAI in that category.
And when we say enterprise, we're not talking about someone's marketing team using a chatbot. We're talking about deep integration into business operations, into workflows, into the kind of stuff that actually moves the needle for these organizations.
Exactly. And you have to think about what that signifies, because for the longest time, the narrative was that OpenAI had the brand recognition. They had the head start. They had the consumer mindshare. And Anthropic was this serious, safety-focused lab that was impressive, but maybe playing second fiddle.
And I think what happened, and I've been saying this for months on this show, is that enterprise buyers are fundamentally different from consumer users. They don't care about hype. They care about reliability. They care about safety. They care about not having their tools go off the rails in the middle of a critical business process. And that is exactly where Anthropic has been investing.
The constitutional AI approach, the responsible scaling policies, the whole framework that Anthropic built around making Claude predictable and trustworthy.
Which was easy to dismiss as, you know, nice in theory, but maybe overcautious, right? There were people who said Anthropic was too focused on safety at the expense of capability. And what we're seeing now is that the enterprise market is essentially voting with its wallet that those things are not in conflict.
That is a really important point. Capability and safety turning out to be complementary rather than a trade-off.
At least from the market's perspective right now, yeah.
So let's talk about the specific partnerships driving this, because they're really illustrative. The biggest one, and this is the one that kind of stopped me in my tracks when I read it, is PwC.
PwC, yeah, talk about your bellwether enterprise client.
PricewaterhouseCoopers, one of the big four accounting and professional services firms. They have deployed Claude across 30,000 professionals.
30,000.
30,000 people at PwC are now using Claude as part of their work. That is not a pilot program. That is not a proof of concept. That is a full-scale enterprise deployment.
And I want to put that number in context for people who maybe aren't steeped in the enterprise software world. Getting 30,000 knowledge workers at a firm like PwC to adopt any new tool, that's an enormous organizational undertaking. You've got training, you've got change management, you've got integration with existing systems, you've got compliance and security reviews.
At a firm that literally advises other companies on compliance and risk management.
Exactly. PwC advises clients on risk. So for PwC to go all in on Claude to that degree, that is a very loud signal to every other enterprise buyer. If PwC is comfortable with this, maybe we should be too.
It's the good housekeeping seal of approval for enterprise AI.
Huh? Yeah, kind of. Like if the firm that stress tests other companies' risk frameworks trusts it, that carries a lot of weight.
So what are they actually doing with it at PwC? Because 30,000 people could mean a lot of things.
Right. So the deployment is across their professional services work, audit support, tax analysis, advisory engagements, client deliverables. The kind of document-heavy, analysis-heavy, expert judgment work that is the backbone of a professional services firm. And the thing about that kind of work is it's not just about speed, it's about accuracy, and it's about being able to defend your conclusions.
You can't just throw a hallucinating model at an audit and hope for the best.
You absolutely cannot. And that's, Again, that's why Claude's reputation for being careful and accurate is translating into enterprise wins in a way that pure speed benchmarks wouldn't predict.
That actually connects perfectly to the other major partnership I want to highlight, which is GitLab, because this is a different flavor of enterprise adoption. It's more about developer workflows and what's being called agent-powered functions.
Right. So GitLab is the big DevOps platform. For listeners who don't know it, it's where development teams manage their code, their pipelines, their software delivery lifecycle. And the integration with Claude here is going deeper than just a coding assistant sitting in a sidebar.
We're talking about agents. Claude operating with more autonomy, taking on tasks within the development workflow rather than just answering questions.
Which is the shift that I think a lot of us have been anticipating. The move from Claude as a tool you query to Claude as an agent that participates in your workflows. And GitLab is one of the clearest examples of that playing out at enterprise scale.
So what does that actually look like in practice?
Think about things like automated code review, where Claude isn't just telling you this looks fine, but is actually participating in the review process, flagging issues, suggesting fixes, and doing that in a way that integrates with your existing GitLab pipelines. Or automated documentation, the stuff that every developer hates doing, but that is genuinely critical for maintaining complex code bases.
The stuff that always falls through the cracks.
Always. And having an agent that can generate, update, and maintain documentation as part of the same workflow where the code is being written, that's genuinely transformative for software teams.
And then there's the trade desk, which is a different industry entirely, but tells a similar story.
Yeah, the trade desk is a programmatic advertising platform. They're how large advertisers buy digital ad inventory at scale. And again, the story there is Claude being integrated into mission-critical operational functions, not just as a nice-to-have assistant, but as something that's actually running parts of the business.
Campaign optimization, audience targeting analysis, the kind of data-heavy work where you need something that can process a lot of information quickly and make intelligent recommendations.
And in advertising, the feedback loops are fast and the stakes are real. If your targeting is off, you're burning client budget in real time. So again, reliability, trustworthiness, accuracy. That's the pattern across all three of these.
PwC, GitLab, the trade desk. Different industries, different use cases, same underlying story about why Anthropic is winning enterprise deals.
And this is just three. There are more. The picture that's emerging is that Claude is becoming the enterprise AI infrastructure in a way that's genuinely broad.
So switching gears a bit, but staying in the theme of Claude demonstrating real-world value, there's this fascinating story about prediction markets that I want to get into.
Oh, this one is so interesting. Because prediction markets are a very specific, very demanding test of an AI's ability to reason under uncertainty.
For listeners who aren't familiar, prediction markets are essentially markets where you bet on the outcome of future events. Things like who wins an election, will a certain policy pass, what will GDP growth be next quarter? And the theory is that market prices aggregate information and produce accurate forecasts.
It's like crowdsourced forecasting. And historically, prediction markets have been pretty good at it. Better than polls, sometimes better than individual experts.
So the question becomes, can Claude compete with that? And the answer, apparently, is yes. Claude is achieving a 68.4% success rate on prediction market forecasting.
68.4, which sounds like maybe not that impressive until you understand the baseline.
Right, because 50% is random chance on binary outcomes. And even sophisticated forecasters, experienced super forecasters who've been doing this for years, typically land in the 60 to 70% range on hard questions.
So Claude is sitting right there with the best human forecasters, which is, I mean, think about what that means. This is not answering trivia questions or summarizing documents. This is probabilistic reasoning about genuinely uncertain future events where there's no clear right answer until after the fact.
And it requires integrating a huge amount of context. Current events, historical patterns, base rates, the specific dynamics of whatever you're forecasting about.
It requires something that genuinely looks like judgment. And 68.4% is Claude demonstrating that it has something in that neighborhood.
There are real applications for this, right? It's not just interesting as a benchmark.
Massive real applications. Think about any organization that needs to make decisions under uncertainty, which is every organization. Investment decisions, strategic planning, resource allocation, risk management. If you can get a forecasting edge, that's worth a lot of money.
And pairing Claude's forecasting capability with tools like prediction markets as a calibration mechanism, that's a pretty compelling combo.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd genuinely be interested to see this deployed in, say, an investment research context or a strategic consulting context and see what the actual business value looks like.
Speaking of applying Claude to things that seem almost impossibly hard, this Bitcoin wallet story. Sam, I know you've been excited about this one.
Okay, so this is genuinely remarkable. There was a Bitcoin wallet that had been locked for over a decade, over 10 years. Someone could not access their Bitcoin because they'd lost access to the credentials or the seed phrase or whatever combination of factors had locked them out.
And Claude helped them get back in.
Claude helped them recover it. And I want to be a little careful here because I don't know all the technical specifics of how this was done. We're reporting on this as a news item, not a technical deep dive. But the gist is that Claude was used as part of the recovery process for a wallet that had been inaccessible for 10 plus years.
Which is significant for a few reasons. One, obviously, is the direct financial value. Depending on when this Bitcoin was acquired, we could be talking about a very substantial sum of money that someone effectively got back from the digital void.
But two, and I think this is the more interesting angle, it demonstrates Claude's ability to work through complex, highly specific technical and cryptographic problems that don't have a standard solution you can just look up.
This is not a task with a documented answer. This required working through a unique situation.
Right, and it required, presumably, understanding cryptographic principles, understanding how Bitcoin wallets work at a technical level, possibly working through different recovery vectors, understanding what information the person had available and how to use it. That's a sophisticated problem-solving chain.
And it's a very human story, too. There's a person on the other end of this who's been sitting on this locked wallet for a decade, maybe resigned to having lost it, and then suddenly...
Suddenly it's possible again. Yeah, I love that. There's something almost poetic about it.
What it says about where AI is right now is that it's starting to unlock things, literally in this case, that felt permanently stuck.
And not just for experts or engineers, that's the other thing. If you can walk someone through recovering a decade-old Bitcoin wallet through conversation, that's democratizing access to expertise in a very real way.
That actually is a nice segue into the next story, which is about education and democratizing access, because the Gates Foundation has made a $200 million commitment to educational technology involving Claude.
$200 million. From the Gates Foundation, I mean...
Yeah.
That's a very specific number, and it's a very large one. And the Gates Foundation's history in education is long and sometimes complicated, but their commitment to using technology to improve educational outcomes, especially for underserved populations, is genuine and it's significant.
So the framing here is that this is a commitment to educational technology that leverages Claude specifically. $200 million toward developing, deploying, and scaling AI-powered educational tools.
And I think the reason this is meaningful beyond just the dollar figure is who it is. The Gates Foundation is one of the most rigorous philanthropies in the world when it comes to evidence and outcomes. They don't just throw money at things. They care deeply about whether interventions actually work.
So for them to commit at this scale to Claude-powered educational tools, that implies they've done the diligence and they believe this actually moves the needle for students.
Which is important because there's been a lot of skepticism, some of it warranted, about whether AI tutoring and AI educational tools actually improve learning outcomes or whether they just kind of feel productive while students offload the actual thinking.
That tension between productivity and genuine learning.
Right, and I think the Gates Foundation's involvement is a signal that there's enough evidence accumulating that thoughtfully designed AI educational tools can genuinely help, not just automate homework.
What do you think the actual deployment looks like here? Where does $200 million go?
So I'd imagine a lot of it goes toward personalized tutoring, the classic use case for AI in education, having something that can work one-on-one with a student at their level, at their pace, in a way that a teacher with 25 kids in a classroom simply cannot do.
The private tutor problem. The fact that wealthy families have always been able to hire private tutors and that advantage compounds over time, and AI potentially democratizes that.
Exactly. And I'd bet some of it goes toward teacher support tools. Helping teachers manage the administrative and planning burden so they can spend more time actually teaching. And some of it probably goes toward content development and curriculum tools.
The scale implications are enormous, too. $200 million from the Gates Foundation can move pretty fast if it's going towards software and deployment rather than, say, infrastructure construction.
Yeah, there's a multiplier effect that just isn't there in traditional education philanthropy. You build the tool once, you deploy it at massive scale. And that's both the promise and, honestly, part of the challenge, because scale can mean losing the nuance of different educational contexts, different communities, different needs.
Making sure the tools work across different populations and don't just optimize for the students who are already advantaged.
That's the thing to watch. That will be the measure of whether this is genuinely transformative or just impressive sounding.
Okay, so we've been talking about a lot of good news for Anthropic this morning, and there is genuinely a lot of good news. But I want to make sure we give proper weight to the security story, because it's important and it's a little alarming.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear G20 financial authorities and central banks being briefed on cyber risks from your AI model, that's not something you can treat as a footnote.
Right. So the situation is this. Security vulnerabilities have been identified in Claude Mythos. That's one of the Claude deployment variants. And those vulnerabilities have been significant enough that Anthropic has gone to brief G20 financial authorities and leading central banks.
Which, let's just pause on that for a second. That is an extraordinary step. You don't brief the G20 and central banks unless the risk profile is something that potentially touches systemic financial infrastructure.
Right. This is not a standard product security disclosure. When you're briefing the people who oversee global financial systems, you're acknowledging that the potential impact extends into areas that affect everyone.
And there's a specific element that was reported that I want to flag because it got a lot of attention in security circles, which is the Apple Mac security circumvention concern. There were reports of vulnerabilities that potentially allowed Claude Mythos to circumvent security protections on Apple Mac systems.
Which is, Apple's security architecture on the Mac is one of the more robust consumer systems out there. The idea that an AI model could potentially find vectors around it is the kind of thing that the security community takes very seriously.
And I want to be careful here, because the reports on this are somewhat preliminary, and the full scope of the vulnerabilities isn't entirely public, which itself is kind of important, right? The fact that they're briefing authorities, rather than publishing a full disclosure, suggests there's a calibrated approach to how this information is being shared.
Responsible disclosure at a very unusual scale.
Yeah, and I think what this illustrates is the broader governance challenge that comes with rapid enterprise adoption. When Claude is deployed across 30,000 professionals at PwC, when it's integrated into GitLab development pipelines, when it's being used for mission-critical operations at companies like the Trade Desk, the attack surface grows enormously.
The more deeply integrated into important systems, the more consequential any security gap becomes.
And this is not unique to Anthropic or to Claude. This is a structural challenge of deploying powerful AI systems at enterprise scale. But because Anthropic is now the leader in that space, by the very metric we were celebrating earlier in the show, they're also the ones who are most exposed to this challenge.
There's something almost inherent in that dynamic. The more successful you are, the larger the target you paint.
Exactly, and I'll say, the fact that Anthropic is proactively briefing regulators and central banks rather than hoping this doesn't get picked up, that's actually consistent with how they've positioned themselves. They've always said safety is a core commitment, not a marketing claim.
Walk the talk.
Walk the talk. And briefing the G20 financial community when you find something scary is very much walking the talk, even if it's uncomfortable.
What do you think the regulatory response looks like? Because G20 finance authorities being briefed on AI cyber risks, that feels like it could be the beginning of something more formal.
Yeah, I think it almost certainly is. We've been watching AI governance frameworks evolve pretty rapidly over the last couple of years. And the financial sector has its own regulatory architecture that moves somewhat independently of the broader AI governance conversations happening at bodies like the European Union or through the White House.
Financial regulators have their own lanes, and they're not afraid to use them.
Right. And the systemic risk framing is powerful in that world. If central banks start thinking about AI vulnerabilities as potential vectors for systemic financial disruption, that's going to produce very specific kinds of regulatory attention. Very fast.
And honestly, that might not be a bad thing.
No, it might not be. Clear rules, clear accountability, clear standards for how AI systems can be deployed in critical financial infrastructure, that's probably something the industry needs anyway.
Whether it wants it or not.
Whether it wants it or not. Yeah.
So speaking of enterprises deploying Claude in ways that get ahead of basically any planning they might have done, the Uber story. Sam.
Okay, this is the one that broke my brain a little bit when I read it.
So the story is that Uber has exhausted its entire 2026 AI budget within 4 months of the year.
4 months! It is May. They are in May and their annual AI budget is gone.
And the culprit, and I use that word with some affection, is Claude Code. Uber's engineers have been using Claude Code so intensively that the consumption blew through projections that were presumably set, you know, thoughtfully for the full year.
And this is such an interesting data point because it's not a story about some rogue department going off script. This is Uber, a massive, well-resourced, sophisticated tech company whose finance and engineering organizations sat down at the beginning of the year and made what they thought were reasonable projections about AI usage costs.
And they were off by what, 300%? If you exhaust your annual budget in 4 months, you're off by a factor of three.
At minimum. I mean, if the adoption continues accelerating, which is the thing about these tools, the more useful they prove to be, the more people use them, the final number could be even further from the projection.
What does that say about how engineers are using Claude Code?
It says they're using it constantly. It says this isn't a thing you try on a tricky problem every couple of weeks. It says engineers at Uber have incorporated Claude Code into their regular daily workflow in a deep way, like in a way where not having it would now feel like a genuine impediment.
That is a fundamentally different relationship with a tool than we're used to talking about with software.
It is, and the comparison that keeps coming to mind for me is cloud computing costs. Do you remember the early days of cloud computing when companies would set their AWS budget and then completely blow past it because the engineering team kept spinning up more instances because it was just so useful and available?
Oh, that's a great parallel.
And that wasn't a failure mode. That was a signal that the technology was genuinely changing how work got done. The budget problem was a symptom of real adoption. And I think that's exactly what's happening here with Uber.
The budget didn't keep up with the utility.
The budget didn't keep up with the utility, which means someone in Uber's finance organization is probably having some conversations right now that are very interesting.
Do you think this is a common pattern across enterprise adopters?
I think it's becoming one. I think what Uber is experiencing is the leading edge of a very widespread phenomenon where the cost models that enterprises built for AI in their budgeting processes were based on assumptions about usage patterns that turned out to be wrong because the tools are better than expected.
Which creates a financial planning problem, but it's kind of the best kind of problem to have.
It really is. If your problem is, our engineers are using this tool too much because it makes them too productive, that is, yeah, that's a good problem. That's a good...
And it probably means a lot of budget conversations are going to be happening at the C-suite level across a lot of companies in the coming months. Revisiting what AI spend should actually look like when you account for real adoption patterns rather than projected ones.
And that's going to be a windfall for Anthropic if it plays out the way I think it might. Because the usage-based pricing model means that as adoption deepens, and there's every indication it's deepening, revenue scales with it.
Which circles back to where we started. This competitive position that Anthropic has built, it's not a snapshot. It's a dynamic that seems to be accelerating.
Right. And the reason I find that genuinely significant, rather than just, you know, one tech company doing well against another, is what it represents for how AI development goes from here. Anthropic's whole thesis has been that you can build transformative AI safely, that safety and capability are not a trade-off. And if that thesis is getting validated in the market, that changes the incentives for everyone in the industry.
It makes the safety-focused approach look commercially smart rather than commercially cautious.
Exactly. And when commercial incentives and responsible development incentives align, you're in a much better place than when they're intention.
That is a hopeful note. Let's stay on it for a second, because I think it's worth saying explicitly. We talked about the security vulnerabilities. We talked about the G20 briefings, and those are real and serious concerns. But the overall picture of where AI is right now...
It's complicated, but it leans positive.
It leans positive. Intentionally, imperfectly, but positive.
Yeah. The prediction market forecasting story, 68.4% success rate, to me, that's not just a cool benchmark. That's evidence that Claude is reasoning in ways that are genuinely useful in the real world, not just impressive sounding.
The Bitcoin wallet recovery. Someone's actual financial life got materially better because of Claude.
The Gates Foundation investment in education. If that goes anywhere close to the intended goal of democratizing access to quality education, the human impact is enormous. Enormous.
And even the Uber budget story. Engineers being more productive, making better software more quickly. There's real compounding value in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think about what software I use every day and the amount of it that has been touched by engineer productivity tools in the last year or two, and it's basically all of it.
The invisible infrastructure of the world we live in.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, let me take a step back and do a quick rundown of the landscape as we see it this morning. Because I want to make sure listeners who are following this space have the full picture.
Yeah, let's do a synthesis.
So the enterprise adoption story is the headline. Anthropic surpassing OpenAI in enterprise AI is a competitive milestone that reflects months and years of deliberate positioning around reliability, safety, and trustworthiness. PSATI at 30,000 professionals is the clearest example, but GitLab and the Trade Desk and others suggest it's broad.
The partnerships are deepening, the integrations are moving from chat-style interactions to genuine agent-powered functions embedded in business workflows. That's a qualitative shift, not just a quantitative one.
The real-world performance is backing up the claims. 68.4% on prediction markets, recovering a decade-old Bitcoin wallet. These are not benchmark games.
The Gates Foundation commitment is 200 million reasons to believe that the educational technology application of Claude is being taken seriously at the highest levels of philanthropic investment.
And the security challenges are real and are being taken seriously, too. Briefing the G20 and central banks isn't PR spin. That's Anthropic acknowledging that with scale comes responsibility and risk.
And the Uber story is kind of the capstone on all of this, right? Because it takes everything. The enterprise adoption, the deepening integration, the genuine utility, and expresses it in the most concrete possible terms. Actual money. Actual consumption. A real company blowing through a real budget because their engineers actually like the tool that much.
You can't fake that.
You genuinely cannot fake that.
All right, I think we should probably start to land the plane here. Any final thoughts from you before we sign off?
Yeah, actually, the thing I keep coming back to, and I know this might sound slightly grand, is that the kind of milestone we opened the show with, Anthropic surpassing OpenAI and enterprise adoption, this is the kind of thing that is easy to report as a business story. Company beats competitor, market share changes hands. But what it actually represents, if you believe what Anthropic has been saying about their mission and their approach, is a validation that doing this right can win.
That the market rewards the approach, not just the capability.
And I think that matters for how the next wave of AI development goes, because every lab in this space is watching, every investor is watching. And right now, the signal coming from the market is that safety-conscious, reliability-focused, trustworthy AI development is commercially viable. That's a different signal than it might have been a few years ago.
And it changes what gets funded and what gets built.
Exactly. So yeah, I think today's show is ultimately a story about a company having a very good moment, but it's also maybe a story about an approach to building AI having a good moment. And that second thing is more important.
Well said. That is a great note to end on. That is going to do it for Claude Daily on this Monday, May 18th, 2026. I'm Alex.
I'm Sam, and this has been a genuinely great episode. Lots to think about.
If you enjoyed the show, share it with someone who you think should be following this space. And that's most people at this point, honestly.
Yeah, it really is. There is no such thing as an industry that is not being touched by this right now.
We'll be back tomorrow with more. Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll see you then.
See you tomorrow.
Take care, everyone.